Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. So did you like Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile? I'm just going to start with that.
Oh, yeah. I guess we don't need to introduce ourselves.
Oh, should we?
I don't know. If you're listening for the first time, this is not what we normally do. That's all you need to know.
Maybe we will normally do it at some point. But you are listening to Biopsy. As we said in the last one, this is when George and I take on biopics. We're kind of the sidecar projects of documentaries. And this one made by Joel Berlinger. So kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Who also made, so he had a big Ted Bundy year. I guess Ted Bundy had a big year, which
Ted's been doing well.
Well, I didn't realize it was because it's the 30th anniversary of his execution.
Oh, right.
Because I was like, what is the reason for this Bundy renaissance? Like, I couldn't nail down why. Because I'm like, well, he murdered a bunch of people over a long period of time in, like, the 70s and maybe as early as the 60s. It's unclear. He claimed to have murdered someone in the 60s. But, I was like, why is this all happening at the same time?
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, 89 is when they fried him up.
Florida? Is that where he finally got his comeuppance? It was Florida, right?
I would say it was probably Florida, yeah. Yeah, that's where he got it. That's where he could not escape out of Florida. But he escaped out of everywhere else, man. Like, the shit in fucking Denver when he jumps out the window. It's like,
you learn nothing. Yeah, nothing else from this is, like, you could be a drifter. You could be off the grid in the 70s very easily.
It seems like the 70s was the decade for, like, if you want to get off the grid and drift and either kill a bunch of people and get away with it or, like, start a rock and roll band in Toluca Lake and become millionaires, you could do that too, you know?
Yeah. Why Toluca Lake? Why did that come to your mind?
Because,
was there a Toluca Lake scene I don't know about? It's not like what's the famous Laurel Canyon scene?
Yeah, Laurel Canyon. I just was reading about I can't remember right now, but someone moved to Toluca Lake when they first got to LA and now they became famous. Who the fuck was it? It doesn't matter. But so Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile on Netflix about our the subject today, Mr. Ted Theodore Bundy, and it stars Zac Efron, who, you know, I did not want to watch this.
You didn't?
Well, no. I mean, I passed it up a million times on Netflix because, for one, it's Zac Efron. For two, it just seemed like some, like, overblown, you know, movie about fucking Ted Bundy. Like, if you watch the tapes, you know, the tape confession shit, you know, that doc, it's just like...
It's also Joe Berlinger.
Oh, right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Who also did Paradise Lost, one of my absolute favorite true crime documentary series. But it's just like, you know, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Zac Efron, but I got to say, I think he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, he did. He was convincing as, like, so what I heard. So this is your first time watching it. You didn't watch it before until we had to do it for this?
I just watched it yesterday for the first time.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. The angle of it is that it kind of, for the first, like, 30, 40 minutes or so, you could kind of believe that he was just a paranoid guy who was being set up. And, like, I know that we all know that's not the case, but, like, this is kind of like my first toe dipped into Bundy world.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, okay, everything has, like, a foreshadowing to it, but it sort of presents it as, like, what a terrible nightmare if this guy was, you know, not guilty of these crimes.
Right.
He's just a nice guy with a lot of turtlenecks who just loves classical music and threatening and dogs.
And law. He really likes law. The law.
He loves the law.
Yeah,
that
he does.
Guy loves law. Yeah, so I don't
Which
know.
Which I thought was kind of bogus for this. I mean, I didn't like that take on this. Because we
you
all
mean,
know
you mean
what
the,
he did.
The angle of presenting him as like having some ambiguity about his evilness.
Yeah, we all know. Yeah. He confessed. We all know he confessed. It's like why? I mean, this might seem dark, but in my mind, if you're gonna do a fucking biopic about fucking Ted Bundy, I want to see how he did what he did, how he was able to manage to do some of this shit, like what his you know, the actual fucking extremely wicked and shockingly evil and vile shit.
That's in the there's some of that in here.
Not much, man. We're talking
not
Ted Bundy.
As much.
Maybe the most famous serial killer of all time. And he did some awful fucking stuff, you know. And it just kind of glossed over that and was more like, here's his love interest. And we're going to keep pretending that he didn't do anything to keep the script going. You know?
Okay, so let's just explain. I mean, people have seen this, but okay. The real life guy had a girlfriend in Seattle for the majority of the time he was committing these crimes. Elizabeth Kepler, who is played by Lily Collins, who I want to say, I'm going to do a quick Google alert on this because I think she is related to another famous. Everyone in here is like related to someone else who's famous.
Oh, really?
Did you also catch that James Hetfield was a cop in this?
Yeah, I did. At the very end, I saw his, because I just finished it about an hour ago.
Yeah.
And I saw his name in the credit. I'm like, that can't be the same James Hetfield. But yeah. It is.
Well, that makes sense, because Joe Berlinger made Some Kind of Monster.
Fuck. Yes. Good job, buddy. Fucking connecting the dizzots.
Yeah, and I was confused because I watched the whole thing, then I saw the credits too, and I was just like, man, he let himself go, because I thought he was that other cop who shows up at Liz's doorstep.
Oh, right,
with the mail envelope,
right.
And that's a different actor named Terry Kenny. So
oh, okay.
I was so confused because I was just like, it didn't look like James Hetfield, and then like now watching it again, I'm like, oh yeah, that's where James Hetfield. That was.
I haven't
James
gone back to see which cop there. I actually thought at first they're talking about the cop that lets him jump out the window in Denver, and I was like, that's not James Hetfield.
Oh, you mean the that guy's not a cop. What is he called? Like a bailiff?
Bailiff.
Something?
Yeah, I guess he'd be. Sometimes they have sheriffs in there.
Hetfield is the Utah cop that pulls him over in Utah. Not the one that pulls him over, but he's being questioned in Utah. That's James Hetfield gets us
got
in
it.
There. So yeah. Who I always want to cast James Hetfield as Sabretooth in the Wolverine movies.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they have very similar looks for sure. I just like my immediate take after watching this was like, I didn't like I like Efron's performance. To be completely honest, I did not like the woman who played Elizabeth's performance that much.
Okay, Lily Collins, her dad is Phil Collins.
Oh, wow. That's why, because I fucking hate Phil Collins. It makes
that
perfect sense.
That was what
now.
You were picking. There was something in the air that you were picking up on.
Fuck you, man. Fuck you. That's awesome. Just something in the studio that got me. I maybe it's because she wasn't given many meaty parts. Like the script for her wasn't great. So I can't blame the actress. I don't want to blame her.
But yeah, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. They've made like at least 5 or 6 different movies about Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
I do think like the angle of this is like, hey, what's up with the woman that was with him during all this stuff?
Right. Yeah, I know. We don't get much. But I guess what I didn't realize either is this is based on Elizabeth's book.
Mm-hmm.
This is based on a book that she wrote, so it kind of makes sense that the focus is on her.
Yeah,
but I didn't know that going in. I only knew that after doing some research right after I watched the end today.
Yeah,
I didn't realize
Phantom Prince. Yeah, 1981 book.
I didn't realize that, but like it's like you're not convincing us that maybe he didn't do it when he did it and he confessed, and that was 30 years ago, and we all know what happened.
I don't think you're supposed to get through the whole movie and still have any doubts, but I think that it was like a, it was to I don't think like going in and having it be so blatant, like off the top, would have, everything would have alienated a lot of people right away, which I guess is part of the problem, is that there's still people that are like huge fans of this guy for some reason. And just, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like it's like, which also, like you were saying, he's the biggest, the most famous serial killer. Do you remember like hearing about this stuff in the 80s?
No, I do remember when he was executed, though. I remember, okay. I remember that day. I remember watching it on the news. I remember people being extremely excited and happy that he was killed. And I also, I remember thinking how odd that was. But also, like, I didn't know much about Ted Bundy back then. I mean, you know, you and I grew up in an era without the internet, so you only got sporadic news. But I don't remember. I do remember, though, like, I mean, I was a kid in the 70s, so I still do remember the kind of, like, white guy, loner, long, shaggy hair, like, you know, you could be kidnapped at any moment kind of thing. I remember my sister hitchhiking, going to shows and stuff.
Oh, yes. You know,
because that's what people did in the 70s, man. And you shared a story earlier with about Debbie Harry.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So this is a story that she recounts in a memoir that she just put out. She was walking around New York in 1972 before she was famous or anything. And this guy in a white car, we don't know for sure if it was a VW Bug, offered her a ride, kept offering her a ride. She got in, then realized there was no handle on the door. It had been stripped off. The crank for the window had been taken out. The whole inside of the car had been like gutted.
That's
and
crazy.
She just was like, oh yeah, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I was able to stick my hand through the window and open the car from the outside, and then just like jumped out of the car. Yeesh. And then she didn't think anything of it until she, because like that again, 1972, this guy mostly committed murders in the Pacific Northwest, Utah, Colorado, you know, ski areas, I guess. And she realized it. She realized what it was, or she thinks it was him, after seeing the execution and then reading about what his MO was. And there is like some debate whether he was in New York in 72, but I guess he grew up in Philly. So he was around, and it's possible. It's not clear when he first started killing people, but like I said, there's some he confessed to doing some stuff in maybe 68, 69.
Yeah, and from some of the stuff I read, you know, he was raised by his grandparents, and they told him his mom was his older sister, and he
that
found out.
That happened a lot back then, too.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. Like, people were so afraid that, like, children out of wedlock was such a, like, you know, fucking Jon Snow bastard situation that grandparents raised kids and like their moms were either an aunt or an older sister. But I guess he found out because he went back to the East Coast. He went to like Vermont in that area and found like birth records or something and found out his mom was his actual mom.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, I mean, she never told him. He found out by just looking at some records. So,
I mean, he fancies himself like this kind of investigatory type of legal eagle.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's pretty fascinating. I mean, like, the difference between like going into acting, going into law, going into politics, going into they're all kind of the same brain. You know, it's all kind of lives within the same brain activity, you know.
Sociopathy.
There you
go. Sociopathy. I don't know why I said it that way. I also say biopic. So
yes, you do. Yeah,
the way I pronounce things.
I mean, there are some things I did not know that I did not learn from this movie just from doing some quick research. Like he was a necrophile, which I didn't know that part.
They don't really get into that in this film.
Not at all. Not even a little bit. Which I guess for some people they're like, oh, that's awesome. For me, I would like to have. I mean, if it's a biopic about somebody, I'd like to know, like, especially if it's a serial killer, what the fuck he did, you know? I mean, it's gross and dark, but, like, it's interesting because these people are fascinating.
I'm trying to think how often necrophilia has actually been portrayed in film. Like, I can think of one movie that is a female necrophile.
Really?
Yeah, but I'm trying to think. And then it's very, it's like an art film. It's like a Canadian art film.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember the name of it. I want to say it's called like Stiff or something. I'm going to look it up because I remember the actress in it. So I'm going to look up that while we're talking. See if I can identify this film.
I mean, for me, the person who stole this movie, I mean, Zac Efron, I thought was awesome. Like it's not easy. I mean, I've done some acting. It's not easy to just give a look to the camera and look evil. You know, like,
yeah,
he did a very good job of looking through the camera.
You're never cast as an evil guy, though.
Never. I think once I was in like a I did something where I had to be like a heavy, and I'm not good at it. It is not my trait. I am the funny guy. I'm the Frank in every commercial,
which makes you an ideal serial killer, Paco.
It does. Nobody would ever know, George. Nobody would ever know. I also just watched like a 15-minute short documentary on John Wayne Gacy the other day. Wow. Holy crap. Man.
I don't know a lot. Do you want to just tell people a little bit about John Wayne Gacy?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's from the Chicago area, and he ran for politics. I mean, he was involved in politics a lot, and he helped out, again, serial killer, political guy, actor. And he was married, but he also had a secret gay life, and he ended up getting off on killing teenage boys. And what's the by far the scariest thing I've ever heard in my fucking life is he had a kid, for like a 17-year-old kid come over because he needed help doing construction in his basement. He had the kid basically digging out what would be his grave.
Oh, boy.
And then, like gave him a, like slipped him a fucking roofie or something. The kid wakes up and he's handcuffed to a chair in John Wayne Gacy's apartment. And John Wayne Gacy's in full clown mode. And he's looking at him, coming up to his face going, "I'm going to rape you." And then like in this high pitched voice saying, "I'm going to rape you," over and over again, and cackling. And this kid actually gets out. He actually manages to escape, but never tells anybody. He held this secret until John Wayne Gacy was arrested and convicted, and then told the cops about this encounter. Never told anybody. And then John Wayne Gacy went on to kill more kids, unfortunately. And then because John Wayne Gacy was a sociopath, just like Ted Bundy, who they think they're smarter than everybody, Gacy invited detectives over to his house because they had an inkling he might be involved. And he was like, "No, come over, have tea." And they went in and smelled the apartment, and they were just like, "Holy crap. This smells like dead people in here." So,
oh my God, that is one thing about anyone who has lived with, let's say, animals, or there's some smells that you can't mask, or some smells that you can't, like, you don't get used to. But a lot of ambient smells, you can kind of. You don't realize it, like, if you just live in it.
Yeah. No, you get like, you get nose blind, smell blind. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, smell blind, yeah.
Like my old roommate and her cats. Jesus Christ. Woo.
Oh, man.
Wow. That shit was eye-watering. I could never figure out why or how she didn't smell that.
Because, she probably had the little parasite that you get when you have a cat. Like, when you do its handle its poop or its pee, it sort of makes you like the smell of the pee.
Really?
Well, that's the thing about maybe I have that wrong. There's something about like cat urine that somehow like mice like get some kind of immunity to that, or they start to like think like it's okay, or they don't realize it's a cat.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That shit made my eyes fucking water, man. I love the Jim Gaffigan bit. He used to do this bit about, you ever go over to like a stranger's house and it just smells so weird? And you're like, how do you not smell that? It smells like someone's cooking vitamins.
Cooking vitamins.
Oh, so funny. But
yeah.
So back to this Extremely Wicked. Yeah. I mean, it's, what did you think? What's your take?
I hadn't really dipped into the whole Ted Bundy saga, so I went into it just like, hey, this is on. This actually seems like I could handle this better than listening to the tapes. And you listened to the tapes, right?
I watched it.
Yeah, what's the name of that?
I think it's the Ted Bundy tapes.
Ted Bundy tapes, right. Yeah. So, which is also Joe Berlinger. So that was the guy who interviewed him, and I just tried watching a little bit of it. I didn't have time to get through it all because, you know, I just didn't. It's 4 hours.
Right.
But that was a guy who, I guess he started confessing in the third person, which seems totally in character with the kind of dude he was.
Yeah.
Like the thing you're saying about like the kind of arrogance and thinking you're smarter than everyone else. Like he really had that sociopathy of like, I'm just going to keep insisting that it wasn't me. And at some point, even like a judge will go along with it.
Right.
Like, which is funny. It's not a funny film. There's bits of humor. Like every time there's a close up on his face when a judge says something and he thinks it's in his favor and then it's not. And it's just like, it's like, and the defendant is found not guilty. You know, like basically, and then he just gets crestfallen.
Right.
Like, what? Like, my bullshittery didn't faze anyone?
But I'm handsome. Come on.
Also,
and I'm smart.
Fucking, can we just have a referendum on what people think is handsome anymore?
Like,
in the 1970s, was this guy, he's not, like, I don't know, who's handsome in the 70s that you could compare him to?
Like, Leif Garrett.
they all look really the same. Like it's a fucking stretch.
What it comes down to with dudes, this is what it comes down to for dudes. Central casting is Anglo-Saxon, square jaw, and eyes that are symmetrical. And noses that don't hook. Those are the three main central casting characteristics for a male lead.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And that's what they all have. And then it doesn't matter after that. But look at any of the male leads, like Brad Pitt, fucking Matt Damon. They all look like they're from Northern Ireland or the Anglo-Saxon area. They all have square jaws. They all have rounded noses and symmetrical eyes. I mean, I've done a lot of castings. That's generally the leading man look, you know. And then any of the secondary principal roles or character, what they call character actors or guys who are like, don't have square jaws, maybe have a hook nose, have kind of funky eyes, you know. So that's how you
like Ted Bundy has funky eyes.
I don't think so. They're dark. He's got very dark. I don't think so. I think he's like kind of classically handsome. He's not like it's not someone who bowls me over with his looks, but like, you know, I think he was skinny. That helps too.
Okay. Well, I mean, definitely like Zac Efron has like a more boyish look to him than Ted Bundy did.
Yeah.
Like a very deep set eyebrow. And
he does.
The number of people that have played Ted Bundy over the years is a very bizarre. There's a couple of actors I don't recognize, but Mark Harmon did it in '86,
and then
Cary Elwes played Ted Bundy.
Really?
Yeah.
That's odd.
Yeah, that seems odd. In 2004, and something that I'm blanking on. There've been like six or seven different Ted Bundy movies. So for this to happen now seems like a weird timing.
Here's one thing I will say about this movie or this biopic is that I felt like everything as far as set and music and that kind of stuff was awesome.
Music's really good. The music is
really
great,
fucking good. The music's great. The set design is amazing. All the it all looks very authentic, you know, which sometimes those things go by the wayside when, like, you know, they have, you know, this kind of biopic. They don't think that much about it. But I thought all that stuff was really good. And, you know, I think Efron did a good job of never really letting the mask slip too much.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Yeah, overall, I was just kind of like, I don't care about their fucking love romance. I don't care. This is Ted Bundy. I don't care about
this. That's
the
part I find more fascinating than like a stranger murdering strangers.
Yeah.
Is like, what the fuck was that relationship like? And then this kind of gives you an insight into like the level of denial that someone could be in.
Right.
And I think that's the part that actually feels more timely in a way than all this sort of like, you know, anonymous drifter serial killing is like this sort of like gaslighting effect of this relationship.
There was a lot.
I think that's
the
part that maybe people, that makes it more like a 2019 film. You know?
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I mean, there is a lot of gaslighting, and I think it's always, to me, it's very, dude, the fucking Scott Peterson doc on Amazon is out.
Oh boy,
I know. That's and that was right around here. That was like Redwood City or some shit. I still lived in Michigan at the time, but.
I remember when that happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Lacey Peters. But it is kind of prescient to have like gaslighting and shit like that at this point, because it does take. But I mean, like it is kind of fascinating where people can have a loving relationship with a guy with a woman and then go out and just completely murder heinously other women, because he's basically like, well, I love this person. This person I have love for. These people are just objects.
Especially when his whole mentality is like misogyny, right? So it's like how does he decide this one's okay? You know, right. It's like a guy. It still doesn't really give you an answer. He's just like, not you, Liz, not you, never you.
Right.
I'm like, what about my daughter? What about my friend from Westworld? What about those people?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think sometimes serial killers are smart enough to not kill where they eat, if you will. Oof, jeez. You know, like they go kind of a little bit away. I just reading.
Do you think it's like a beard or like a cover?
I don't know. I think it's deeper than that. I think it's an actual, this is a person that reciprocates love to me. Like it's a safety thing. I think it's psychological. I think they think of this person as like, this is my love, and these other women are objects. These aren't women. These are objects. These are inanimate objects, basically. And I hate them. Or maybe not inanimate, but I don't think it's a mask or a beard, that kind of relationship. But fuck, I don't fucking know. Like, it's reading some of the stuff about what he did, though. Like, he would go back out and revisit the women he had not buried, he'd just leave them and then like have sex with them until they were too putrefied or eaten by animals, and then he cut off their heads, and they found about a dozen heads in his apartment, so he kept their heads as like mementos. You know,
you didn't see, like, no one saw this because it's a podcast, but I had to like dip out of the frame.
It's a good thing we don't always do true crime.
No, I mean, it's not my favorite thing. And the fact that this is like a fictionalized thing, I thought like I could handle a little bit better than. How would you compare it to having seen the Ted Bundy tapes before seeing this?
Well, I think
that's the order they came out in. Ted Bundy tapes was that first.
Yeah, it was. And that's why I did not want to see that. This seemed a little too saccharine to me. It is, I have to say, segue before I get into what you just said, it's nice to see Haley Joel Osment out there getting work.
Yeah. Oh, have you seen The Boys?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, which also, like, everything you're saying about Ted Bundy applies to, like, Homelander, too.
Oh, shit. You're right. The other day I saw a meme with Captain America, and it said, this is how Americans see America. And then it showed Homelander, and like, this is how America really is. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, two things, like, is this a biopic?
Right. I thought the same thing, dude.
And then I also want to talk about the bleed of fiction and narrative, because Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is out now, and there's like a wave of, can I just talk about this thing that's on, about this Twitter thing?
Yeah, that's crazy.
There's kind of like parody stan accounts for Charles Manson and Ted Bundy, and people making like TikTok videos where they're like a woman about to get murdered by Ted Bundy and being like, here's the thing. I get where like that dark sense of humor about the stuff comes from.
Yeah.
It's just like in the 80s and 90s, that would have been like something in like an underground zine, and now it's on Twitter. You know what I'm saying? Like it would have been like, I don't know, like shit, like even Vice magazine would have done maybe at the time. Or maybe there was like some... Manson always had a weird fascination for like the punks, because it was sort of like the counter hippie thing. It was like the apotheosis. I don't know what that word means. Some word of hippies. But now and then people now, there are some legit... These are mostly like parodies of the idea of being a Ted Bundy fan, but then some legit people retweeting and being like, I don't know, this whole wave of Ted Bundy attention has had people be like, oh, Ted Bundy is zaddy, or like, you know, like I'd let him murder me and that kind of shit.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, just like, that is kind of like the same fascination that they had at the time with him. They were like just women showing up and being like, I don't know why I'm here. I just am compelled. I'm scared. And maybe this is a whole thing about the subtext of all true crime anyway. It's like, I'm scared and kind of like horny about this.
Aroused. It's arousal. It's like alpha male arousal stuff, I think.
But it's women that are into it. That's the part that's also
my strange. Point. Yeah, they're into the alpha male.
Okay, I see what you're saying. The alpha male is like the man who doesn't follow the rules.
Yeah, and he's going to, and if there's any danger coming, if he loves you, if he picks you and there's any danger coming, he's going to destroy that danger.
Oh, this is like that fucking movie Drive with Ryan Gosling.
Oh my God.
This is a sociopath. Why do people like this?
I think it's safety. I think it's primal. I think it's fucking lizard brain shit, dude. I really do. I think it goes down to why people fucking vote for Trump. He seems safe. He seems like he's going to vanquish enemies for you.
Like, well, he does seem like a kind of an alpha, but like the kind that has to prove them that they have big hands all the time.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, it's obviously.
I want to maybe talk. Let's have a separate discussion about, like, did you see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yeah.
Okay. That should maybe be a separate podcast.
Is that a biopic? What is that? That's not a biopic, is it?
It's not a biopic.
No. Yeah. No.
How could that be a biopic?
I thought that's what you were submitting.
Well, I'm saying like, yeah, that's why it doesn't belong on this show. It's like,
no,
but it does have a tenuous relationship to reality.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was fun. I mean, Malkovich, we got to talk about Malkovich. I made a mistake. I was meant Tarantino, but Tarantino films, like if you go in with a low bar, you have fun. It's, you know.
I'm going to save this for Patreon. Let's just do a different recording. but Manson figures into that as well. I was never a big Manson. Are you up on all the Manson stuff too?
I mean, I know stuff about Manson. I don't know if there's been anything new that's come out.
I mean, he's dead, I guess is the newest thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the kind of like, I think this is more like our collective social obsession with true crime is coming out in like the famous, like, quote unquote, handsome serial killer Ted Bundy and like Twitter worship of this dude. I don't know. I'm not into it. I don't think he's like, when you see the actual footage of him at the end of the film, like he's definitely like creepier.
Yes.
Then the real guy is definitely creepier than Zac Efron playing the real guy.
Yeah.
There's just something kind of like fidgety and like weaselly about him. I guess knowing what we know, that's my interpretation. Like he looks more like a young Tom Berenger to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. I could see if we're going to cast this doc.
Or Tommy Lee Jones or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure. To me, he seems pretty regular looking, but, you know, back then, too, I think, you know, because they had a first ever televised trial, I think that made him a celebrity, you know, and people love celebrities in this fucking country, especially then when it was so new. And the fact that he got engaged or married on TV in a trial, like, so fucking weird, man. I love John Malkovich's portrayal of that judge. It was really, I think he stole the movie personally.
He did. There's such a lot of stunt casting in this movie. Malkovich is a good one. The lawyer that he has in the first trial is the guy from Burn Notice. So I was a beard. I'm like, why does that guy look familiar? A lot of weird casting. And then the guy from Big Bang Theory is in this.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. He was pretty good in it. He seemed
does not do an impression of the real judge at all. He's just full on Malkoviching.
He's Malkoviching, which is, I could watch forever. All his partners, like, you got it, partner. Don't you shake that finger at me. Like when you watch the actual real video from the trial, and then when the judge goes into like, son, if I would have loved to have had you serve in front of me as a lawyer, you're smart. I got no animosity towards you. I'm like, what? You have no animosity towards a guy who killed two women? I mean, that's what he was on trial for, and almost killed two others. And you probably know that he's killed more. Like, you have no animosity to a serial killer? That was odd.
Yeah.
And that was real life. I mean, that's what he really said.
Yeah, I remember when this came out, then people were also talking about basically Ted Bundy is like talking about the white privilege of serial killers, which actually has come up on this podcast before. Yeah. When Andrew T was on, he's just like, look, basically the reason why there's famous white serial killers is if you had these tendencies and you're a person of color, the system dealt with you when you were like 18, you know?
Yeah.
They would have already like railroaded you into something else.
Absolutely.
So the fact that he got to defend himself, dude, jump out a window.
Yeah.
Just like all this stuff.
There's things that he talked himself out of for years that we don't even know about. I mean, there's probably many times he had a woman dead in his car and was pulled over that he probably just talked his way out of, you know, because he was a white dude.
Yeah.
You never know.
That Gacy story, I mean, the stories of the people that get away and then the people that almost get away are like the Dahmer one is so fucked up. We're going to sidetrack again. I had an intern who was from Milwaukee. Isn't that where Dahmer's from, Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, I met a guy at a bar one time who had this whole story about how he was lured to Dahmer's house and basically was like could have been a victim, but it was like he was supposed to bring a refrigerator to Dahmer's house. And then Jesus. Dahmer like invited him in for something. And then he just kind of like, I don't even think he knew that it was like murderous. He just was just like, I think he was just like, this guy seems, it was like maybe like his homophobia saved him.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
He's just a dude from a bar. He's like, oh, this guy invited me over his house to deliver a thing. And I got creeped out and I just took off. I like punched him and took off.
Yeah.
Something like that. So it's just like weird that like, what you about know,
the naked guy that the cops took back to him.
That's the one. Yeah. And he, I think was Thai.
He was Asian. Yeah.
He didn't speak English.
Right. Yeah.
And what, like the cops just handed him back. That was like, that's the worst.
Here's your boyfriend back. Sorry for the trouble. It's like, and oh my God, that's just insane. Well, and then like there's the BTK killer, you know, he would have gotten away with it forever if he just didn't get bored. He got bored and sloppy, basically.
Which one's BTK?
The Bind, Tie, Kill. He's the guy from, I think, Arkansas. He was a cop. He had killed tons. I mean, I don't know about tons. I don't know the number, but he killed a bunch of women and then just stopped because he was just like, I can't keep doing this. And then he just got bored and started getting sloppy and sending like the press things and finally got, this is pretty recent. This was in the last 20 years. But anywho, so extremely wicked, shockingly evil and vile. I don't know. I would say if you're into true crime shit, you probably should watch it, right?
I mean, yeah, it's like,
I give it a 3 out of 5. That's what I'd give this. A 6 out of 10.
Sure. That sounds about right. I watched it and I was just like, this feels like poorly done in one regard and then really well done in another regard. Does that make sense?
That's how I feel about it as well.
Maybe the script was bad, but most of the acting was good.
The set pieces were good, I thought. The set pieces were good, I thought.
Yeah.
The music was good, but the script was thin. The script was too thin, and I think that it was taking an angle that was trying to be clever without trying to be too salacious for the evil doings that he did. But to me, it was just kind of boring.
Also, has Joe Berlinger done much nonfiction, done much fiction before? I feel like he hasn't done a lot of fiction.
I don't think he has. Yeah. I don't think he has either. Not that I remember, but.
What a weird way to start. He did all the research. So he's just like, I guess someone already had a script and they gave him the script. And he's like, yeah, well, I'm already working on this other thing.
Well, it was a book. And then I think someone adapted it, and then it just gets stretched out and stretched out and stretched out, and you end up with kind of a weak fluff piece. But, you know, it's not that long, so it's an hour and a half. So.
Oh, he did. You know what? Actually, Joe Berlinger made Book of Shadows Blair Witch 2 in the year 2000.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Which I never saw.
Of course not.
But
do you remember that?
I remember when Blair Witch... Yeah, I saw it in the theater, and Tom Amiano was in my screening.
Nice.
I don't know why Tom Amiano came to the screening.
I saw it at the Old Balboa Theater.
Yeah, then we might have been in the same theater.
Maybe.
Yeah. I got a random story about Blair Witch, but again, this is going to have to be a Patreon select. So anyway, I think we're ready to tie a ribbon on this one.
Do it.
What do you think? You should only watch this if you are horny for Zac Efron.
Sure. Yeah. If you see his ass. So,
I don't remember that scene.
There's some sex. There's when they strip him down the first time and you see his butt. So there's a little eight pack in there. There's a little butt action, a little sex scene. If you're into true crime,
Phil Collins, you'll love this.
All right. Like I said, 5 out of 10, 6 out of 10. Not great, not bad. Decent biopic. So watch it at your own discretion, folks.
Is the most literal biopsy that we've done on the show
so far. And there's so many biopics that there's so many. But thank you guys for listening. George, this was awesome.
Yeah, we'll be back with documentaries someday soon.
Someday soon. Yes, we will.
I'm at 7% battery life, though.
Oh,
so
shit.
We got to wrap it up.
Goodbye, everybody.
All right. See you. Bye.